WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Good afternoon, ladies and gents. Yes, Current Sports is on your radio. I'm your host, Al Martin, and we have tons to get to on today's show, including Mark D'Antonio. Yes, head coach Mark D'Antonio accepting Taylor Lewan's apology for his dirty play during the MSU-Michigan football game this past Saturday. The Pistons, they fall to one of the league's best last night, but they didn't go out without a fight, and Tiger Woods can hit a golf ball so hard that it crosses from Europe to Asia. I'm not kidding. I'll explain in just a sec, okay? And today we welcome Jeremy Sampson on the show to talk about a new soccer team in town. He will tell us all about it in just a second. I want to remind you all to be a part of the hands-on discussion each and every weekday on Current Sports by liking Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports. Follow me on Twitter at AlMartinWKAR and give us a call here at the Current Sports Studio. Today's Current Sports question of the day has to deal with the Tigers' new manager. Yes, Brad Ausmus. Is he the right move, folks? 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. I have to remind you all that you can be in the TV studio audience tonight. That's right, when my guest on Current Sports is Bob Every. He is the executive director of the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame. Every is a former prize fighter and trainer and coached softball at Lansing Community College for many years, where he led the Lady Stars to a national title. Yes, he now coaches the Michigan State University club softball team. Now, recording takes place at 6 p.m. That's right, 6 p.m. tonight at WKAR Studios on the MSU campus. Seats are free, but reservations are strongly recommended because seating is limited. That's Current Sports with Al Martin and guest Bob Every. To reserve your free seats to be in the TV studio audience, visit WKAR.org. All right, well, let's get to our current sports headliners on this November 6th, 2013. All right, a day after Michigan left tackle Taylor Lewan gave a public apology for his behavior in Saturday's 29-6 loss to Michigan State, Spartans coach Mark D'Antonio accepted the gesture, saying, quote, "Football is football. I accept people's apologies. I don't hold things against people." So the answer is yeah. I accept his apology, no problem. Now, Lewan, who was caught grabbing the face mask of several Spartan defenders, including reaching down to grab Isaiah Lewis's face mask when Lewis was just laying on the ground, he acknowledged he made mistakes. Lewan went on to say, "When I did it, that was blatant. That was just poor and immature of me. There's no way to make it look like I'm a good person in that situation." Now, this isn't D'Antonio's first go-around with the player taking heat after the battle for the Paul Bunyan Trophy. D'Antonio went on to say, "I had to go through that situation, the exact situation with William Golston 2 years previous. And I know Will was not trying to hurt anybody. But things happen on the football field. Some people may refute that, especially if they wear blue. But they can see how we felt on the other side of the bench. It's not my call. I was not willing to suspend Will Golston in 2011, but he was still suspended. If you ask me, I think Taylor Lewan should definitely be suspended because I think Lewan's gestures in that MSU and Michigan game were a little bit worse than William Golston's. But hey, that's just me talking. All right, Cabrera, a finalist, folks. Despite battling nagging injuries for the second half of the season, Tiger slugger Miguel Cabrera still managed to be named a finalist for the American League MVP. Now, Cabrera joins Angels outfielder Mike Trout and Orioles first baseman Chris Davis as the finalists for the honor. While he didn't win another Triple Crown, Cabrera led the AL with a .348 average en route to his third straight batting title. He also hit 44 homers and drove in 137 runs, both second to Davis. Now, Cabrera did win the Player of the Year award voted by players for the second consecutive season. The MVP award will be announced on November 14th. All right, Seattle Mariners. After the Tigers found out their new manager would be Brad Ausmus, former Tiger hitting coach and top managerial candidate Lloyd McClendon is taking his talents to Seattle. Yes, McClendon has been hired as the 16th manager of the Seattle Mariners, who lost manager Eric Wedge after the season ended. Now, the Mariners have plenty of talent, including ace Felix Hernandez, and went 71-91 last season. McClendon went on to say, "I am extremely excited about the opportunity to manage the Seattle Mariners. Seattle has a tremendous group of talented players, and the fans and city should be excited about the club's future. I'm looking for this group to take a big step forward." Now, McClendon had previously managed the Pittsburgh Pirates before joining the Tigers staff in 2005. All right, Pistons and Pacers. Despite a 27 to 9 second quarter, the Detroit Pistons couldn't top the unbeaten Indiana Pacers and fell 99-91 at the Palace. Now, Paul George led the Pacers with 31 points, 10 rebounds, 4 steals, 4 assists. Paul George is so good, folks. Now, the Pacers are just are the last unbeaten team in the NBA right now and show no signs of stopping. Afterwards, this is from center Roy Hibbert. He said, "We just want to play well and get out the gates. We're an experienced team, and we know every win's important." Now, poor shooting plagued the Pistons, who shot a measly 5-for-25 from behind the arc. And it's not like they didn't have their looks, folks. I mean, a lot of those three-pointers were wide open, a lot of space there, but they just couldn't find the bottom of the net. Now, both Josh Smith and Brandon Jennings were 1-for-6 from three-point land. Jennings led the Pistons with 17 points despite shooting 6-for-20. It sounds like the Milwaukee days, right? All right, Detroit will look to rebound Friday when they host Kevin Durant and the Oklahoma City Thunder. This is KD and the Thunder's only trip all season to the Palace of Auburn Hills. So there you have that. All right, MSU. Michigan State's winning ways continued last night, but in a different arena than usual. Poker. Yes, Waterford native and MSU grad Ryan the Beast Reese. He won the World Series of Poker main event, taking home a cool $8.4 million. And one of the most outrageous bracelets you will ever see, folks. Now, Reese Ace King beat out competitor Jay Farber's Queen 5 to end the tournament after over 3 hours, yes, 3 hours of heads-up play, folks. Now, Reese was sporting a Calvin Johnson jersey, having frequently wore MSU gear earlier in the tournament. He broke down as he was awarded the bracelet. He went on to say, "I want to thank my family and my friends. They're the best friends in the world." And he also went on to say, "I was overwhelmed with joy. I was so happy. I started crying, and I was just speechless. My parents told me they were proud of me and loved me. It was awesome." So how about that? The MSU grad, Ryan the Beast Reese. And it's so funny, him wearing that Calvin Johnson jersey after he won the tournament. And, you know, I got a lot of tweet in Texas saying that's probably the only time you'll see a Lion hold up, you know, their arms in victory after winning a championship. Hey, give us some time. Give the Lions some time, folks, all right? But there you have it. Ryan the Beast Reese, MSU grad. He takes home the World Series of Poker main event last night. All right, Miami Dolphins coaches reportedly asked Richie Incognito to toughen up teammate Jonathan Martin. Yes, the Sun Sentinel newspaper of Fort Lauderdale cites that communication took place when Martin skipped 2 days of the team's organized team activity program. Now, the paper also reports that, quote, Incognito was encouraged by coaches to make a call that would get him into the fold. That's from one source. Now, ever since the Dolphins suspended him Sunday night, Incognito has said nothing publicly about the scandal until a Miami television caught up with him Tuesday night. Incognito went on to say, "You know what? I'm just trying to weather the storm right now. This will pass." Now, as the National Football League begins the investigation, the NFL Players Association released a statement saying, "We expect that the NFL and its clubs create a safe and professional workplace for all players." Now, the Dolphins can suspend Incognito without pay for up to 4 weeks, which could cost him close to $1 million. All right, the Associated Press is reporting that Nick Saban's agent, Jimmy Sexton, told Texas Regents in January that Texas is the only school his client would consider leaving Alabama for. Yes, former University of Texas board member Tom Hicks wrote in an email saying, Sexton confirmed that University of Texas is the only job Nick would possibly consider leaving Alabama for, and that his success there created special pressure for him. Now, reports first surfaced of contact between Hicks and who is the current Texas board member, Wallace Hall, and Saban's agent in September. Now, at the time, Saban responded to the report by saying he was, quote, too damn old to start over somewhere else, end quote. So there you have it. If Saban was going to go somewhere besides Alabama, I guess it would be Texas for him. All right, Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods on Tuesday hit golf balls over Istanbul's Bosphorus Bridge, which connects Europe and Asia. Now, according to a local news service, the bridge was closed from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. local time for the shoot, and Woods appeared to hit his shots right down the middle of the bridge. Woods is in Istanbul for the Turkish Airlines Open and is receiving $2.4 million to play in Turkey this week. If you've seen the video, you got to see the video, folks. I mean, the local media there, they're covering it, and you can see Tiger. He's like on this isolated, you know, grass in the middle of the bridge. Well, on the left side of the bridge. And it's funny because if you look at the video, there's still cars coming on the other side of the bridge. Hopefully no one got hit by a golf ball. But, yeah, it's pretty cool stuff. So I guess Tiger Woods is the only golfer who can say he can hit a golf ball, you know, to another continent. That's unbelievable, folks. All right, LeBron James, he reached his latest milestone in signature style. That's right. James scored a season-high 35 points. Dwayne Wade had 20. And the Miami Heat beat the Toronto Raptors 104-95 on Tuesday for their first road victory in three tries this season. Now, with a putback dunk at the 2:31 mark of the first quarter, James became just the fifth player, yes, the fifth player in NBA history to score 10 points or more in 500 consecutive games. Unbelievable stuff. James said afterwards that, quote, when I see a stat like that, I'm like, wow, because I know the history of the game. I know the guys who paved the way for myself and my teammates. To be in such a great class like that, it's an amazing feeling. Now, James said he was humbled to join Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, whose streak of 787 in 508 games is unbelievable. Michael Jordan is also in that list. He tops that list, actually, with 866 games. Karl Malone with 575 consecutive games, and Moses Malone with 526 games. Those are the only players to accomplish that feat. Shane Battier went on to say afterwards, that's apt company. Yeah, you think? Now, it was the 162nd time during the streak that James has reached 10 points in the opening quarter. So hats off to LeBron James, the best in the game, folks. Hands down, no question about it. That is certainly a streak. I don't know if he'll ever, you know, reach the mark of 866 like Michael Jordan. I mean, that's a lot of years, a lot of playing right there. But hats off to him. That's certainly unbelievable stuff. Well, those are your current sports headliners on this November 6, 2013. If you want to comment on any of those, give us a call, 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. Or you can comment on our Facebook page or tweet me. And today's current sports question of the day has to do with the new Tigers manager, Brett Ausmus. Yes, is he the right guy? Give us a call, 517-355-9527. But in the meantime, let's welcome our guest on today's show. He is a former sports reporter for WLNS-TV6 and WILX-TV. Now the team owner, yes, the team owner of the new National Premier Soccer League team right here, yes, in Lansing, Michigan, folks. Jeremy Sampson, congrats, first of all, man, and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Al. I appreciate it, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem, no problem. So first of all, Jeremy, I got to ask you, where did the inspiration come from to start this team? I got to ask you, because I had no idea you went into soccer, Jeremy.
well, most people think I'm crazy. I don't know if that's an inspiration or not, but, you know, it's something that I've thought about for a couple of years. Obviously done a lot of research on, love the sport. I think it's a sport that's clearly growing in the United States and also in mid-Michigan, too, and the entire state of Michigan. And, you know, this league is a fun league for people to come out and watch guys who are competing at a high level in the summertime trying to hone their skills while trying to get to the next level. So inspiration for me, it really, Al, is trying to grow the game. And that's, you know, the root of soccer in the world, you know, is huge. It's huge in so many different parts of our country, and it's growing all the time. So that's kind of where the inspiration came from.
So, Jeremy, have you always been a soccer fan? How long have you been a soccer fan?
Yeah, a long time. You know, I did not play a lot in high school. My high school didn't even offer soccer. So
really?
Played as a youth growing up and in some rec leagues and things like that. I'm not a very good player, but enjoy the game and enjoy watching the game. You know, a lot of people get turned off by it because there's not enough scoring. I mean, that's always the biggest complaint.
Yeah.
But I watch it for the other complexities, and you know, you compare it a little bit to hockey sometimes. Sometimes the best action in hockey is away from the puck, and a lot of times in soccer, the best action is away from the ball.
Right. That is so true, Jeremy. So when you talk about just the popularity of soccer, when you look at it here in America, is it growing? I mean, what's the numbers like, Jeremy? I don't know if you know that. I just want to throw it out there.
Yeah, I mean, I can't give you specific numbers, but is it growing? The answer is yes. And we're going to see a nice little rise in the popularity of soccer coming up here this summer with another World Cup year. As you know, that takes place every 4 years. The United States is going to be in the World Cup this summer. That's going to be played in Brazil. And you always see a nice little jump in the interest when there is a World Cup here. The United States team under Jurgen Klinsmann is vastly improved from where they were at, say, 2, 3, 4 years ago. But yes, the sport is growing at all levels, and especially the youth level. I have a 9-year-old daughter, and she's gotten into the sport. And just to see at the very early levels how it grows, it's really interesting.
That is great stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, I'm chatting with the team owner of the new National Premier Soccer League here. Yes, right here in Lansing, Michigan, Jeremy Sampson. Jeremy, what was the process like of getting this team here in Lansing and just starting it up?
Well, it's a bit of an extensive process. you know, we contacted the NPSL about an expansion team, and they gave us some very specific instructions of things that we needed to present to them, and we put together a business plan and an aggressive business model, I think, submitted those plans to them. And then, you know, once you do that, there's a vote that takes place of the other members in your conference as to whether or not they want to vote you into the league. And we feel very fortunate that we were voted in. We'll be playing against teams from Detroit, Cleveland, Cincinnati, places like that around the Midwest. So we feel very fortunate, again, Al, that they thought enough of what we put together as a business plan to invite us and join us in their league.
That is great stuff. And, Jeremy, you guys have done a pretty cool initiative to already start the buzz and you know, get the community involved with this league. And tonight, you all will be sharing your new name, colors, and crest. And it's pretty cool because you allowed, you know, people who heard about this to kind of chip in and propose the name or colors of the team, right?
Yeah, we did. I mean, really, Al, the basis of what's going to make this team work is community involvement. It's going to take community involvement from sponsors. It's going to take community involvement from fans coming out to watch and others supporting it. And, you know, the Lugnuts did this when they were first founded here in town. They had a name the team contest. So, you know, I always say the best ideas are borrowed. They're not always your own. But
right.
This was something for us to try and engage the community. And really, we want them to feel like this is their team. And I think this was a good starting point for us to really solidify that relationship, to let the people know in Mid-Michigan that this is your team, that they have some ownership in it. And, you know, we're all kind of pulling on the same rope. And so we were fortunate we had over 500 team name submissions.
500,
and,
wow.
It was more daunting than I thought it was going to be. You know, I thought maybe we'd get 100 or 150, you know,
right.
But we had over 500. So going through all those, and there were some duplicates, but going through all those and just trying to pick something that we thought represented Lansing and what it stood for. And it was a difficult process again, but one I think that the fans will really enjoy when they see what we unveil tonight.
Now, I got to ask you, Jeremy, because production assistant Matt Lucky here, he actually entered a few ideas, and one of those ideas were the Lansing Lightning, and he chose the colors green. Did he win it all, Jeremy? I'm just asking.
I'm sorry to say that Matt did not win it all.
Sorry, Matt.
That's about as much as I can tell you. To be honest, we got a lot of LL alliteration, you know, trying to go. We got lightning bugs. We got lightning.
A lot of lightning then, huh?
We did. We got a lot of trying to work, locomotive, you know, trying to work with that L alliteration. But I'm sorry, Matt. That's about as much as information that I can tell you is Matt did not win.
Matt did not win. He's a little disappointed now. He's going to walk. He's walking it off right now. All right, Jeremy. Oh, man. So tell the folks about the event tonight. You know, because it's a free event, right? Tell them the location, what time, that kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. It is a free event, and we're going to be out at Jimmy's Pub on Chandler, and the event starts at 5:30, and give some people some time to get there, and we'll make the announcement sometime in the 6 o'clock hour as to, you know, probably mid-6 o'clock hour as to what the name is. We have a little program. Our head coach, Eric Rudlin, will be there with us. Mm-hmm. Eric is going to do a fantastic job for us. He's well-known in this area and does a great job, has done a great job in the past of putting teams together. And we put a lot of faith in him, and I know he's going to do a great job for us this season. So he'll be there. We will unveil the team name. You get a chance to see the crest. To get a chance to see the colors of what the team, what we chose for that. We will have some T-shirts and sweatshirts and things like that for sale if people wanted to purchase any of those tonight as well. It starts at 5:30, Jimmy's Pub.
And I want to ask you, because you kind of stole my next question, Jeremy. I want to ask about Eric Rudlin. I mean, when you talked about hiring him as the head coach of this team, talk about, you know, Eric's past and what is he, you know, where he's coached, and talk about his experience in coaching.
Well, to me, Al, it was really a no-brainer, to be honest with you. It was I've had to make a lot of decisions as far as this team goes, and this was the easiest one that I had to make.
Gotcha.
Eric's well-versed in well, first of all, his dad is a legendary high school coach in the Jackson area. Eric's been around the game forever, and he's had a couple of coaching stints. Some smaller schools. He was the head coach at Spring Arbor a couple years ago down near Jackson. Mm-hmm. He's a current assistant with Madonna University right now. He's played at very high levels. He's gone over to England and learned the game from folks there. He's trained with them. He's helped coach with them. The thing that I like most about Eric is that he's a go-getter. He's an idea guy. He's always pushing me as an owner, more ideas, try this, what can we do this? And that keeps me on my toes. And the other thing about Eric is he has a very long history of bringing groups of players from different backgrounds together and having success right away. And this team is going to be made up of guys who play college soccer at Michigan State or Michigan or Western Michigan or, you know, Olivet College, or it could be some other guys who played here locally in high school who are now playing in colleges out east or somewhere else. So he has that uncanny knack of really being able to bring a team together in a short period of time, and that's really what this job calls for.
Wow, that is certainly exciting stuff. I look forward to the season starting for you guys. And when does the season officially start for you all, Jeremy? And how many games do you play?
Two really good questions. I don't have firm answers on either of them.
Gotcha.
The season runs mid-May through mid-July. So I'll be actually in Atlanta this weekend for the annual league meetings. Mm-hmm. And there's been so much expansion in the league this year, Al, that we're not really sure even what the divisions are going to look like specifically. So I've been told that we should plan on league games, 6 home and 6 away. Now, that could fluctuate. It could be 5. It could be 7. It could be 8. So I will know a little bit more, I think, this weekend as to how that's all going to shake out. But from what I understand from years past, we should expect at least 6 home games this summer.
There you have it. And Jeremy, before I let you go, you as team owner, the head of this team, what are your goals for this for the first year, you know, for this team getting started here in Lansing? What are your own personal goals, Jeremy?
I don't think you have that much time in your show.
Right.
It's a great question, Al. And I think really my main goal is just to put a product out on the field that Mid-Michigan can be proud of. I know we're going to have a team that's going to compete. Are we going to win every game? Probably not. Are we going to win our fair share? Who knows? But I really want to put a product on the field that the people in Mid-Michigan are going to be proud of. And as I mentioned before, I want to help grow the game. I'd like to see more younger kids get involved in the game and start at an early age. And, you know, it's great for exercise for kids who are running around and eye-hand coordination or eye-feet coordination, if you will. I mean, it's a really great game to build those skills at a young age. So really, for me, it's about bringing the soccer community together, building the sport, and hopefully win a championship. You know, that wouldn't be a bad first year, would it?
That wouldn't be bad, right? Well, there you go. Well, the excitement starts tonight, folks. Again, the party will begin 5:30. Jimmy's Pub on Chandler Road near the East Lansing Soccer Complex. Jeremy Sampson, owner of the new National Premier Soccer League team right here in Lansing, Michigan. Jeremy, thanks so much and look forward to seeing what comes of this great team, man.
I appreciate it, Al. Thanks again for having me on. And be sure to check Facebook and our Twitter tonight for updates. Anybody who can't make it out tonight will have the logo and the name and everything up there tonight so that they can see it.
There you have it. I'm sure many people will be glued to their laptops, all right?
All right, Al. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Jeremy. All right. Well, when we return to current sports, we will talk Tigers and Pistons. Is Brad Ausmus the right guy as Tigers manager? Give us a call, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Current Sports will be right back.
Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, best-selling children's author Jan Brett turns to her ornamental chickens for inspiration.
I said to my husband, I've learned everything I need to know about men just watching my roosters.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now, coming up at 2 p.m.
Weekday afternoon at 4, All Things Considered keeps you up to date on current events nationally and around the world. I inform you on what's happening at the state and local levels. Hi, I'm Brad Walker, your host for All Things Considered. Join me as we stay on top of the things that matter to you on All Things Considered, weekdays from 4 until 6 on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Well, if you missed our first segment, we had Jeremy Sampson on the show. Jeremy is the team owner of Lansing's newest soccer team. Yes, the team owner of the new National Premier Soccer League team here in Lansing. Tonight, they will reveal their new name, color, and crest at 5:30 at Jimmy's Pub on Chandler Road near the East Lansing Soccer Complex. That's exciting stuff. So Lansing now has a minor league soccer team. How about that, folks? All right, well, let's talk some Tigers really quick. Of course, many of you out there know that the Tigers have a new manager. After saying the organization will look for an experienced manager to replace the retired Jim Leland, the Detroit Tigers selected a man who has no experience managing a major league team. That's Brad Ausmus. Now, luckily, Ausmus has plenty of experience on the field after an 18-year career. That included, yes, two stints with the Tigers. Not one, but two. Now, Ismus was one of the hottest names in coaching circles. He knows the opportunity to debut as manager for a World Series favorite is rare and seems ready to lead the veteran squad, saying, "I'm well aware that you don't generally get dropped into an opportunity with a team like the Detroit Tigers." And he really impressed everyone during his interviews, including the man, GM Dave Dombrowski, saying, "I was taken back with how impressive he was. Every time Brad's name came up, it was effusive with praise." I'm now joined by Matt Luckey and Aaron's engineer right now. Alex Shark, excuse me. Too many A's going on in my head right now. Guys, is Brad the right move for the Tigers? What do you think?
I think so. I mean, I guess we won't know until the season starts and they, you know, start playing the games again. But I think he's fine. I think the quotes that he's had about wanting to be more aggressive on the base paths, he had a couple quotes that said, you know, we can't keep waiting around for Cabrera and others to hit three-run homers. We've got to be able to generate runs. And after two playoff runs where they fizzled out because they couldn't generate easy runs, I think that's a step in the right direction. I think, you know, he's young. He's, you know, a fresh hire. I think he's going to change some things. I think obviously the talent is still there to get where they were last year. But now I think we're going to have a bit different strategy when we get to that playoff push. And I think it could be a good move.
I think it could be too. I mean, Brady's, what, 44 years old, I believe. You know, he's been around. If you look at just reading some reports when this came out and reports of former teammates of Brad's. He's had over 1,000 teammates. That's a long career. He was in MLB for a long time, over 1,000 teammates. And, you know, those teammates who was with him during that, throughout his career, I mean, would always talk about how Brad just had a great knack, you know, just mind for the game. He had a great mind for the game. And, you know, he's been around, you know, some of the game's best. And he knows what he's doing. That's what you hear from former players who played with Brad. And, you know, I think for him right now with this Tigers team, I mean, you got a World Series team sitting there. You come in, you're in a great situation with a team who is ready for a World Series. We've been waiting on this for a long time with the Tigers. And I think for him to first off gain respect in that clubhouse, I think that it would be kind of cool if Jim Leland, you know, walked in the clubhouse with Brad and kind of, you know, echoed the approval of having Brad there. I think that'll be a good move. I think that should be Brad's first move, if you ask me. I mean, just to gain respect, saying, okay, it's kind of a passing of the torch type of thing. And we all know that, you know, Jim is not totally leaving the team. I don't know what role he's going to have with the team in the upcoming future, but Jim is still going to be around with the team. But I think just having Jim's approval and seeing that from the players, just even if it's Jim just coming in saying, Brad is going to do a great job for you guys, you know, blah, blah, blah. Just kind of just having that seal of approval in that locker room would do a lot for the psyche of this team, I think. I think that'd be a good move for him. If it happened, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that happening, and I wouldn't see Leland not doing that. You know, right. I wouldn't see him, you know, going against that. I think it's not going to be that hard for Ismus to earn the respect, though. I mean, it's a veteran clubhouse. He was a veteran player. I mean, he played for 18 years.
Yeah, long
and
time.
When guys move from playing to managing or coaching, usually you want the guys that weren't all-star level players. I mean, he did make one all-star team. He won 3 gold gloves, but he wasn't the perennial all-star. He wasn't the best catcher in baseball for his entire career. You kind of want the guys who carved out a niche and had a long career but didn't have a great career.
It
didn't come to him easily. You know, he had to work for everything he had, and he carved out a role on numerous teams, had a nice lengthy career.
Yeah.
I mean, you want that kind of
mentality.
Guy. Exactly. You want a guy who had to work for it and knows the work that goes into it. He said he understood the game. He said the worst part of playing was hitting. He didn't like, you know, he would rather think about the strategy of the game than actually get up there and swing the bat.
Right.
And this is a guy who had an 18-year career
right.
in the majors. And, you know, playing catcher, obviously he knows, you know, more about the strategy of the game. And that's a very important position. And, I mean, he's a smart guy. He went to Dartmouth.
Yeah, you know, he's a smart guy. Yeah,
he knows what he's doing.
Yeah,
Tony La Russa gave him a big, you know, thumbs up, seal of approval.
And I just keep going back to that interview that he had with Dombrowski. I mean, the way he, you know, presented himself, you know, what he said throughout the interview, it impressed everybody, and it made the choice easy.
There's a reason his name popped up with every coaching vacancy in the majors.
Right, without a doubt, Alex.
All right, guys, is he the right guy for the Tigers? I don't think he is. Now, the reason being is he's only been coaching for less than 5 years. He was a special ops guy for Texas. I just think with the veteran team, yeah, he was a veteran player. But I don't think it's the right hire for the Tigers team who, in my opinion, needs an older manager. Who needs a manager who's been there for 20 years, 15, 20 years. I mean, I just don't think that the Tigers, at this point in time, with the team they have, can afford to take a risk on a guy who's never been a general manager before. I mean, this is
That's what I'm saying. When you talk about managing a baseball team, and I'll go on record in saying this, I think managing a baseball team compared to coaching an NFL team, compared to coaching a soccer team, compared to coaching a hockey team, is the easiest of sports to coach or manage.
No way.
Without a doubt.
Really?
I think it is. Because if you think about managing, you're really just tweaking the lineup here and there. And situational type of things. With a football, you got to deal with offense, defense, formation, plays, so much. Basketball, same thing. Formations, plays. If anything, if there's a sport that someone with no managerial experience can come in and do a decent job at, it's the game of baseball.
Al, you got to be crazy, man.
I am not joking. Not at all. Al, we can debate. This could be another barbecue.
Al, have you ever played baseball?
Yes. I used to play in elementary school. I played shortstop.
All right. Now, as shortstop, it's not as big as in the field, but as shortstop, have you ever heard of formation shifting? Have you ever
that's
heard
not
of switching? Have you ever heard of averages and holds?
Alex,
and
that's not as complicated as a defensive coordinator trying to figure out what an offense is doing.
If not,
no,
it's more.
Not at all. Baseball managing is the easiest of jobs.
Al, have you ever heard of Moneyball?
About a coach.
Have you ever heard of Moneyball?
I'm just saying, but going back to my point here, Brad Ausmus, if there's any sport where a guy with no managerial experience who's a young guy, and let's not forget, this is a team, they already had the pieces to win a World Series. This is not a team that he has to build up from the ground up. He has to come in, make the right moves, make the right situational moves in the lineup, which is what Jim Leland took a lot of heat for when he was here. You make those right moves, they'll walk away with a ring. But first of all, it starts with the respect. When you bring in a guy with no managerial experience, you have to gain the respect of those players. And you have to do that somehow, some way. I don't think this is the wrong move for him. At all.
I don't know. Well, yeah, I mean, it's not like football. But at the same time, do you know how many times Leland has called hit and runs and has known certain tendencies? He's been there for 20 years.
That's why,
Ausmus doesn't know the tendencies.
That's why they don't have a ring right now. Well, this is part of the reason.
I feel like he would know the tendencies, too. I don't think.
Somewhat.
Somewhat.
But I think that there's an extent of 20 years of playing in different situations and the amount of teams that he's seen compared to Ausmus that I think that adds a little bit something more. Same with Dusty Baker. In my mind, a guy like Dusty Baker would have been a good hire because he has seen a ton of experience. He's seen a ton of plays.
So you would have chosen Dusty over – what about McClendon?
I would have chosen anybody with more than 5 years of experience.
So you're big on the experience.
Exactly. With a veteran team like the Tigers, yes.
Now, with a veteran team, you don't need experience as much as a team that doesn't have – they don't have the pieces to win a World Series. But that – go ahead, Matt.
Let's go cross-sport and compare him to Jason Kidd. Recently retired – now coaching the Brooklyn Nets, a veteran-laden team who has big aspirations for the season. Where do you compare those? I mean, do you think Brad Ausmus is a better or worse hire than Jason Kidd?
It's a good point. It's a good point. Honestly, when you look at the Jason Kidd hiring, he's dealing with the team that traded away all their roster. You know, this is a rebuilding Nets team. When you look at Brad Ausmus,
they're not rebuilding.
They got Paul
loaded.
Pierce, Cage. I mean, I could go
on. Yeah, but
on.
They just got him.
But this team has so much experience. You talk about experience with the Tigers. This is a veteran team with veteran players who has all the pieces that could. If you look at the roster, they can win. They're a championship team.
Sure.
To contending team, I would say. And that's what the Tigers are right now.
You're saying the Nets are.
Yes, they're championship contending team.
They're not a veteran team.
They absolutely are a veteran team.
Are you serious? Are you kidding me, Alex?
They just became
Darren Williams.
You got Darren Williams.
Lopez.
You got KG. Paul Pierce is on that team.
Jason Terry.
Are you serious?
In my eyes, a veteran team is a team that has been with a solid group of guys together for a long time.
No, that's not what veteran team means, Alex.
They are veteran players, but it's not a veteran team.
Veteran team means veteran players who are on that team who have had years and years of experience, who know what it takes to win a championship or know what it takes to go deep in the playoffs. That's what the Brooklyn Nets have right now. That's what the Tigers have right now.
Would you say that the first year that LeBron, Wade, and Bosch came together, is that a veteran team?
No, they were young. I mean, well,
they were young, exactly.
Chris Bosh is young. Dwayne Wade had more years, I mean, than anybody on that team. Did Chris Bosh and Dwayne come in the same year, I believe?
Yeah, same draft year.
Yeah, that was
and,
the same
and,
draft
and
year.
And LeBron.
Wade's older, though.
Yeah, they weren't that old. You know what I mean? When you talk about a team like, I want to equate it to, let's see here.
Al, they weren't old, but do you know how long they were in the NBA? LeBron was in the NBA.
So, Al, you're telling me that a veteran team, to be defined as a veteran team, you have to have a group of players who play with each other.
So basically,
for
you
many
have
years.
To
for
be,
several years.
You have to be the Spurs.
Yeah, you have to be exactly
no, Spurs.
You have to play with each other for
the
years.
The Lakers were a veteran team with Kobe and Bynum together, and Gasol and Artest. That's a veteran team. Several years.
That's not how I define veteran.
You want to go? We can keep
I don't
going.
Define. You're defining veteran totally different.
Veteran
than
team. Veteran players
I'm
or veteran team.
The same thing. Veteran players and veteran teams are the same thing. If you got veteran players, it's veteran
I understand
team.
Where you're coming from, saying that they need to gel and play together.
That's what any
but at
team
the same
who's
time,
new coming around.
Under no circumstances could you say that Kevin Garnett is not on a veteran team or a veteran.
He's got
player
a cane and an oxygen
I mean,
tank out there playing. Yeah, how is he not like, a veteran? Like, come on, man. He's got his AR
when you have that
card
many
right
players who are 34 and older.
That's veteran.
It's a veteran
team.
Team.
Without a doubt.
I think
you're defining
two,
it different.
I think there are two sides of it. There are two sides of it.
Okay, so who do you think the Tigers should have hired? And we'll hit the break.
I told you. I told you. I think Dusty would have been fine.
So experience McClendon? Getting to
experience.
The World Series
any,
and not winning?
Literally any coach.
We just had that.
I mean,
literally.
How many years did Dusty Baker have a really talented Reds team and they did
just,
absolutely
just
nothing
totally
in the playoffs?
Same with Leland. It's the same thing with Leland. But what I'm saying is any coach – I would have been fine with more than 5 years of coaching experience.
Okay.
That's it.
Well, I personally want to say congrats to McClendon. I thought that, you know, he was my choice
Do you think the Tigers knew something that we didn't know?
I just think that, you know, Brad was so impressed. We weren't at the interview. I mean, the interview could have went, you know, he might have had the best interview. I mean, there's been talks about Brad for a while, according to certain reports. I don't know. I don't know what happened in the interview, but I heard that interview went very, very well. So, and that was the, you know, the icing on the cake for the Tigers. All right, we're going to hit the break really quick and come back, talk really briefly about the Pistons, and kind of dive into that Incognito and Martin story once again. All right, guys. If you want to comment on any of these topics, 517-355-9527. We'll be right back.
The HBO series Boardwalk Empire is introducing a lot of viewers to music of the 1920s. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with musician, arranger, and band leader Vince Giordano. He and his band, the Nighthawks, perform the music for the show. He's been obsessed with music of the 20s and 30s since he was a child. Join us.
That's Fresh Air, coming up at 3 o'clock. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Well, we just finished up talking about the Tigers' new manager, Brett Ausmus. Now, let's talk a little bit of Pistons. Then, guys, we're going to talk about, of course, that Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito story that's taken over the sports world so far this week. Despite a 27-9 second quarter, the Detroit Pistons couldn't stop the unbeaten Indiana Pacers and fell 99-91 at the Palace last night. Paul George was sizzling hot. 31 points, 10 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals. Oh, my goodness. The Pacers are the last unbeaten team in the NBA and show no signs of stopping, folks. So Detroit will look to rebound Friday. They will host the Oklahoma City Thunder. Guys, thoughts on the Pistons and Pacers last night? Go ahead, Matt.
I think, you know, I took the Pacers to win the NBA title. And they are looking really good so far. That team is so good. Paul George.
He's so good, man.
He's making the leap.
Superstar?
I think so.
He's a superstar. Watching that game last night, Paul George, you know what? Something that is so impressive about Paul George, just looking at last night's game, was that he doesn't force anything. He doesn't come out there and try to force shots. He plays within the structure of the team. He does what the team needs to get the lead or to be successful, and he picks and chooses his spots on when he wants to score. There, the first, 5 or 6 minutes of that game last night, Paul George didn't score a bucket. And all of a sudden, when the offense becomes stagnant, Paul George hits a jumper here, hits a tough fadeaway there, goes to the rack here. Second quarter, 0 points. No points in the second quarter. They started struggling. Pistons started to gain the lead in the beginning of the third quarter. Paul George says, okay, it's time. And he goes off. That's so intelligent. And he's so good defensively. Probably the best defensive guard in my book. He has these long arms. He pressures you to take tough shots. He's unbelievable. Yeah, he's a superstar.
He's a complete player, and he's, what, 23, 24?
Yeah, so young.
He's got such a bright future. He's making the leap. And like you said, like if there's a quiet way to score 31,
he
did. You
saw it last night.
You know, he just chips away, and, you know, 10 boards, 4 steals, 4 assists. He's a complete player, and he's probably – ooh, I don't know, probably the best player in the division. I mean, other than Derrick Rose. If Derrick Rose can get back there, but yeah. Paul George is right up there. Like, I think if I'm, you know, drafting a fantasy draft, just making a team, he'd be at the top of my list. I feel like for, like, you know, wing players, it'd be maybe LeBron.
Yeah. Yeah, I would put Paul George in there.
Like,
it's crazy.
I would take Paul George over Carmelo Anthony.
And don't forget, Paul George did a great job last year in the playoffs against LeBron and company. He was great.
He's long enough to frustrate him.
Those long spaghetti-type arms. But, yeah, as far as the Pistons go last night, as far as the starting lineup, I'll start with there. They had Chauncey. You had Jennings starting as point, and you had the three, Josh Smith and Drummond. Last night, I thought the Pistons did a good job in the first half. I'm talking about the first half alone. Defensively, they were great. The Pistons, I mean, they had a few blocks. Smith, Drummond, and Monroe all had blocks in that first half. That second quarter was the best quarter of the game for the Pistons. Jennings seemed to, he was aggressive. That's Jennings. He's an aggressive type of player. He started hitting. The thing about the Pistons, and we talked about this in the preview last week, they got to get better at shooting the basketball.
Yep.
That's period.
Just taking too many threes.
Way too many.
What is Josh Smith doing taking 5 threes in a game?
Right.
He has
way
no
too many
business doing that. I mean, I think he went 1 for 5. Jennings went 1 for 5. You know,
yep.
When they first started, it was, I think Josh Smith went like 3 for 7 in the first game from 3.
Right.
Don't do that, Josh.
No.
Even though you made right. 3, 7 shots from out there is far too many. You are way too talented a player to be taking shots 23 feet from the basket.
Yeah, exactly. And you even saw, there was a moment in that game where Andre Drummond took a fadeaway from the left side of the basket. I'm sitting there like, whoa, what in the world is going on here?
Yeah.
You know, the Pistons, though, they look confused sometimes offensively. They struggle to find their offense. And we saw that last night. It started to come on in that second quarter where great defense led to great offense, where they were attacking the basket. They went away from attacking the basket. That's when they started to have success. You saw lights here and there for this Piston team that say, okay, this team could be something good here. But it's like almost in that third and fourth quarter, the Pacers are so good. They have levels. Like Meek Mill says, there's levels to this. You know what I mean? There's levels. They just turn it up to another notch, and they start to pull away, and you start to see them get blown out. But they did fight back, though. That's why the score looked at, like, 99-91. They fought back, but we saw some fight in this Piston team, and I like to see where they are in the middle of the season when they start to gel.
Now, do you think the hiring of Rasheed Wallace has any effect on that fighting? Or, I mean, I'm starting to see some more scrappiness from some of the big men, too.
You are. If you looked at that game, that's a great point, Alex, because if you look at that game throughout that entire game, man, there was a lot of jarring, there was a lot of talking throughout that game, a lot of trash talk, a lot of guys getting in each other's faces. I know Lance Stephenson and Will Bynum, they got into it a few times. Hibbert and Drummond, they got into it a few times. I mean, it was a really scrappy, I don't like you type of game. I think Rasheed, I think that's one of the biggest reasons they got him. I mean, to bring that type of mentality, you start to see that. I think that's starting to rub off on the big man. You didn't see Drummond, because I saw a side of Drummond I hadn't seen in a while.
And that's good because, you know, coming out of college, the big thing on Drummond was his effort and if he's going to be engaged in games. And if you have a guy like Rasheed constantly prodding you to do it, he's going to be engaged. And if you have an angry Andre Drummond, that's a very good thing to have as a Pistons fan because, that guy can play. And if he's engaged and active and, crashing the boards, he can be a very effective player. But when he's kind of just fades into the background, that's when the trouble starts. And you need a guy like him to combat a Roy Hibbert. I feel like they kind of almost played to a draw.
They did almost, yeah. If you look at that entire game, I mean, they went tit for tat throughout the entire game, But, overall, though, I think what you take away from that game is the Pistons, we saw some shining moments in there where you said, okay, because they had a 4 or 5 point lead at the beginning of the third quarter where they really started to roll, and then, you know, things just kind of went haywire. But you saw some spots here and there. The Pistons have to get more consistent on their offense. Defense is coming along, and we saw how good the Pacers are, folks.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, they struggled on offense, but, you know, a lot of teams are going to struggle on offense against the Pacers. Yeah. They are really good.
They are so good, man. You got Lance Stephenson and Paul George. Hibbert's good. All right, we can go on and on. All right, guys, well, a story that certainly me and Matt discussed on yesterday's show that's certainly been, you know, been talked about for quite some time since it broke is a story concerning Miami Dolphins players Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin. Now, of course, I believe both players now are away from the team. Jonathan Martin, you know, if you look at the – it's sort of almost a bullying type instance here where, you know, you have Richie sending voice messages to Martin saying, you know, I'll kill you, I'll slap your mother. I mean, just really – outlandish, crazy things here. And for today's Barbershop Wednesday, guys, I want you, because, you know, Jonathan Martin's a rookie, and we see rookies get hazed all the time, or, you know, the jokes and the pranks all the time with rookies, you know, carrying the baggage and the luggage for teams. I want to ask you guys, does rookie hazing go too far?
Well, let's step outside of the rookie hazing and look at the FAMU band member hazing for a second, because that isn't necessarily through sport, but that was just through marching band. Now, I personally think that the sports have kind of spilled on to a lot of other aspects, and the hazing could have started, I don't know, who knows where the hazing could have originally began and had its origin, but has it gone too far? Yeah, I think absolutely
in this instance. I'm going to say my spit. Go ahead.
No. I think absolutely it has. When it's affecting players out of the court or out of the ring or whatever, then it is. It's causing distraction right now. Then I think it absolutely is.
Yeah, I mean, when it follows you home, and that's kind of what the Incognito thing entails. But that story, it changes every day, because now it's being reported that the Dolphins asked Incognito to toughen up Martin, and that, you know, his Dolphins teammates are sticking up for Incognito, and, mm-hmm. you know, he was one of us, you know, he's our guy, and it's just the narrative of that story changes by the hour, basically. But, you know, as far as rookie hazing going too far, I think, you know, when it gets to this level where you're, you know, hurling slurs at people in voicemails and text messages, it's like, you know, it's one thing to have, you know, you got to pay your dues as a rookie in the NFL. Yeah, carry right. the pads, maybe pay for a dinner or two.
Right.
But even that's weird, though, because, you know, when you make the guys that get paid the least amount of money pay for everyone's dinner.
Yeah, it's like, come on.
Seems bad.
Especially, you know, I was watching a report last night on, it was on CBS. CBS's national network. They reported the story last night, and watching it, there was a picture from one of the players on the Miami Dolphins teams, and, you know, it's funny, Deion Sims was actually on that on the report, too. They asked him, you know, about the rookie hazing and everything. He's a rookie now, of course. But anyway, they had a picture of, you know, the player sitting down and eating, and the bill was $30,000. And one of the players had twit-picked it and said, it's always great to eat when rookies pay. So $30,000, that's
crazy.
That's ridiculous. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, I agree with you, man. Anytime that it, you know, like you said, if it follows you home and you start getting personal here, you're talking about somebody's mom, you're using racial slurs. I mean, that goes beyond your typical rookie hazing, carrying the pads type of thing. You know what I mean? That becomes personal. And, you know, it's upsetting when you see something like this go too far. And Alex, you bring up hazing in general when you talk about the bans at historically black colleges and universities. I mean, those go too far. And you saw a case like that where you saw, I forget his name, Champion, I believe. He passed away due to an instance called Crossing Bus 9 or 3. I forget the name of the bus, but they say Crossing Bus 9. And in the ceremony, what you do is you start from the front of the bus. It's completely dark. It happens at nighttime. You're blindfolded, and you have members of the band on both sides of the bus, and you're walking in through the middle of the aisleway, and you got just people just hitting you with instruments, slapping you, punching you as you try to walk from the front of the bus to the back of the bus. And he was beaten so bad. Champion was beaten so bad that by the time he got to the back of the bus, you know, he started complaining of wooziness, eventually collapsed, died moments later. That kind of stuff is ridiculous and goes too far.
And if you have that kind of stuff going on, how do you get people to join your organization?
I have no idea. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Why would you subject yourself to that? And that's the big thing. It's because, you know, they want to be included in the group. Yeah, they want the respect of their peers. And so they subject themselves to this, but it's like, oh my gosh.
That's horrific stuff right
there. It is. It really is.
You know, when it goes to that amount. But, yeah, and now it's funny because I really think now, guys, that the Dolphins organization as a whole, the coaching staff as a whole, is going to take a lot of heat now because, you know, this report coming out about the coaches saying that, you know, Incognito was asked to toughen up Martin. Of course, that's the wrong way to do it, by sending a man threatening voice messages of that nature. But, you know, the coaching staff telling him to do this, they're going to take a lot of heat. I don't know how, but they're going to take a lot of heat for it. Fines, maybe some suspensions are coming. This thing is going to blow up, I think.
It just seems like, why would you ask him to do that? Knowing his past, knowing, you know, the altercations he's had previously in his career.
Mm-hmm. Right,
I guess because he's the, you know, the toughest guy on the block.
Right.
But at the same time, it's like,
Come on.
If you have a guy who you're worried about not being tough enough, you're going to – I see what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
But just terrible execution. And the other thing is, you know, we there was a story a few months ago about Tony Scheffler and Lou Delmas and how they used racial slurs at each other in locker room.
Right.
And that this could be kind of a similar case. But where he used it with a player who wasn't in that group, and then, you know, it gets blown out of proportion, or I guess. But then, you know, he goes a step further and leaves it in the voicemails and in the text messages. That's a terrible idea, A.
Terrible. Paper trail,
what are
man.
You doing?
He's leaving a paper trail to get caught, you know what I mean?
I guess it's one thing to joke around with your buddies, but it's another thing to have it cross that threshold and become threatening and you know.
Right.
Endanger a guy, in his mind at least. It's just mistakes all around.
Should Incognito play another down in the NFL?
I think he should. I think although it's a little bit extracting from the situation, I just don't think that this warrants anything. I don't think this affects his play directly. I mean, let's go back to when you played high school basketball, Al.
Nothing like this.
You can't tell. Yeah, but you can't tell me that in high school today, students don't get it. Hazed?
Oh, yeah.
There's such a fine line of what hazing is. Go run 5 sprints. Hazing. Go do 20 push-ups. That's hazing, technically. So when we're talking about this issue, this is so out of the water. This is so different that you're probably going to say, oh, you know, there's no way after this is so much more serious, toughing. But when you compare it to something like the FAMU ban death, it doesn't even draw close. It's manslaughter.
Yeah, but Alex, when you talk about this one, I think talk about racial slurs.
But we already saw it. From the Philadelphia Eagles.
I will kill you type of stuff. I mean, that type of stuff says a lot about
slander,
a man's character. That type of stuff is you know. We talk about the band hazing thing. I mean, that blew up because, you know, you had a death. I mean, you had something happen where you had to do something. But here you have a paper trail, like I said, of a man who obviously, to me, seems like a racist, who seems a little crazy, off his rocker, and to me, who just seems just like a hateful dude. You know what I mean? That goes beyond hazing. That's personal stuff right there. And to me, NFL, who's big on, Goodell talks about it all the time, talk about, you know, integrity and character and maintaining that in the league, and then you have a player doing this type of stuff. That goes beyond the game, and that becomes, you know, very personal thing, and I don't think the guy should play at all in this league.
Yeah, I honestly don't know. I don't know. I think the more interesting question is, would he ever play for the Dolphins again?
That locker room
is a mess.
Yeah, it is.
I mean,
the Eagles and the Dolphins both.
How Joe Philbin? I don't know if he's going to make it through the year. If this starts to affect the way they perform on the field, I think you're definitely going to see some, you know, house cleaning being done by the Dolphins. But it just, this is not the thing that you want in the middle of the season.
Not at
all.
You
have this huge controversy between two teammates.
Exactly. Two players causing this. Yeah. Uproar, man. All right. Good stuff, guys. Well, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Production assistants Alex Shark and Matt Lucky. Engineer Aaron Young. Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to all of you out there for tuning in. And thanks to Jeremy Sampson. Again, catch Current Sports TV tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Be a part of the live audience. Sign up at WKAR.org. That's tonight at 6 p.m. as I sit down with Bob Every, former prize fighter, former college softball coach with LCC. He'll be my guest tonight. Don't miss it. Be a part of the audience. You can listen to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing. And WKAR FMHC3 East Lansing, as always, take care. Have a fantastic day and be easy, people.